At NPR and this station, editorial integrity is non-negotiable. Your support ensures that our journalism remains independent. Stand with us and donate right now.
To show your support and fortify our future, go to WYPR.org.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Before we get started today, I want to thank our good friends, our engineers here at WYPR, Ray Heppner and Megan Amos. They are responsible for completely renovating Studio A. So we are coming to you live today from Studio A. It's our normal studio. Of course, we've been out of it for the last several weeks while Ray and Megan completely renovated, and we are very, very grateful to them for terrific, terrific work. It ain't no easy thing to do, to change the equipment, to upgrade things, to get things looking spiffy and looking fun. So if you ever get to come over here to the WYPR studios and check out a studio tour, you will see what's going on in Studio A. But our very, very boisterous gratitude to Ray Heppner and Megan Amos.
We are stars. We are gorgeous. We are
And that's exactly where we're going. We're going back to the garden today. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. It's the official midpoint of summer. Well, actually, it's halfway between the summer solstice and the autumnal equinox. The official halfway point is August 7th. But 2 days ago, we marked the halfway point between Memorial Day and Labor Day, which is what most folks sort of think of as summer. So it seemed like the perfect time to invite our good friends Farmer Chippy and Carrie Engel back to the show to talk about what we're harvesting, what we're planting, how we're doing in our efforts to keep our gardens and plots and pots blooming and booming. Farmer Tiara Matthews is here as well from the Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm along with Farmer Chippy. Tiara, it's good to see you. How you doing?
It's good to see you, Tom. I'm doing great.
Good. And Farmer Chippy, welcome back.
Thank you, brother. I'm here.
Always a delight to have you. And Carrie Engel, the greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms up in Cockeysville. Good to see you as well.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So what's flying off the shelves these days at Valley View Farms?
I would call this our slow time. Mm-hmm. So at our farm, we are seeding plants for kale, cabbage, broccoli, and a lot of that will be in towards the end of the month, maybe a little bit into August. So we're doing a lot of that. We sold out of a lot of seeds. So people are using seeds more than I'm used to, which is fantastic. We get a lot of questions right now about what's going on in the garden, whether it's powdery mildew or black spot on roses or blossom end rot on tomatoes. And so we're all trying to we're trying to figure that out for people, see mm-hmm. if we can help them out to have a good harvest.
It can get complicated. So Farmer Chippy and Farmer Tiara, you guys at Plantation Park Heights, there's always something going on. You got a crew over there today, right? You know, from one of the companies in town, Care First.
Yeah, Care First is here. That's our partner. You know, we are funded by medical companies, usually our biggest funders. Care First, we're very, very happy for that partnership. There's about 20 of them over there, in collaboration with the Youth Works, as well as the Northwest Wellness Camp, and a Plantation Park Heights Leadership Academy. So if you look right now, you will see about 50, 60 people on the farm all working together to make sure we can provide food for Baltimore City.
That's terrific. And listeners, if you have questions about what's growing in your garden, we hope that you will chime in and let us know what's going, what's working, what's not working. Any questions you have for Farmer Chippy, Farmer Tiara, or Farmer Carrie Engel, we're gonna make you a honorary farmer today.
Everybody.
So our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. That's 410-662-8780. You can give us a call with your question and comment. Our email is midday@wypr.org. So Farmer Tiara, you do so much with children. There's kids all over the place up at Plantation Park, right? So yeah, give us a little sample of what the kids are doing to help out with the farm and to learn so much about farming.
So we have, in collaboration with Youth Works and Plantation Park Heights Leadership Academy, Northwest Wellness Camp. So the youth are learning about plants, pollinator gardens. They're harvesting for our Wednesday Drew Hill Market. That's today from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. right next to the Rawlins Conservatory. And they're engaging in community. They're also getting ready for tomorrow's Thursday food giveaway that we host from 12 to 2 p.m. So the kids are there learning, engaging, and also having fun. That's one of our main priorities when we work with youth.
Tell us about the food giveaway. How's that work?
So every Thursday from 12 noon to 2 p.m., AgriHub Baltimore Food Hub hosts a food giveaway where we give away free produce, fruits, and herbs to anyone who's in line. All you have to do is sign up and leave your zip code and email address.
And what's in the box or the bag
so you
that
get
you're giving
kale,
to folks?
Kale, collards, beets, onions, potatoes, tomatoes, sage, basil. So many different things. It's random produce items every week, and it's always seasonal.
Yeah, terrific stuff. So Farmer Chippy, you started with one plot. There, it's on the right-hand side when you're driving down Park Heights Avenue. What is the footprint of the farm now? That was, you know, I don't know how many years ago.
Yeah, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And thank you for the partnership with Baltimore City Department of Planning. We were able to, and shout out to Kelly Bacala. Big shout out to Kelly for that, you know. And, of course, Carrie Nye, our personal planner. With their help, we were able to source different types of properties that we looked at. We were able to set up not only growing areas, we were able to set up an orchard, and now we have some infrastructure plans to put up two additional hoop houses, although we have four already. So with their help, we were able to identify the locations and then get on sort of like our schedule in order to purchase it. So right now, we are on the move. We're very happy about that.
And you have a nursery in your future too, right?
Right. So we're building a nursery because we have a problem getting the trees that we want and the culturally appropriate plants that we need. So we decided if we team up with Valley View and other suppliers, we will be able to host a nursery for the first time in Baltimore City, run by farmers and available for the community.
That's terrific. That's Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm up on Park Heights Avenue. Valley View Farms, of course, up in Cockeysville on York Road. So, Carrie, you mentioned a few of the problems that people are coming to you with. Blossom end rot is one of them. It just sounds awful to say the term blossom end rot.
It's frustrating. It really isn't the worst thing in the world, but your tomatoes come on and you go out and the first few you pick have a black bottom on, and it hurts you. Usually the plant does grow out of it, but it's a water that doesn't get to the blossom end quite the right way. So it's usually a calcium deficiency. So we suggest that people add calcium nitrate to the soil that is a natural. But the main thing is not to disturb the root system too much and to try to give them even watering, which we haven't gotten from the skies this year. You know, we either go drought and cold or hot and wet. It's just been quite a year for weather to kind of deal with the garden.
And what happens, like on my tomatoes, I got a bunch of grape tomato plants. My wife eats them like candy, and I like them too. Every day the tomato plants, the leaves, there are certain leaves that do turn yellow and get brown pretty quickly. I'm cutting those off.
That's perfect.
Is that the right thing to
exactly.
do?
Exactly. And a lot of what we have to do this year is make sure you have room between your tomato plants. By you pruning that, you're allowing more air through that, and that's going to help a lot with things down the road, especially with blight and some other things that might
set in. More room between it, because mine are like growing on top of each other.
Little list here, we suggest tomatoes go 3 feet away from each other in 3 foot rows. And that's most of them. I mean, there are some determinate plants that you can go a little bit closer, but most of your grape tomatoes are either semi-determinate or indeterminate, and they just get pretty darn big. So give them space.
So semi-determinate, what does that mean?
Most of the tomato plants we have just grow and grow and grow. They're indeterminate. They just keep going. Then there are the bush type that are determinate. They maybe get up to 3 or 4 feet high or smaller, depending on the variety. And a semi-determinate somewhere there in the middle. So there's a grape tomato I think we have called Solano that's in between.
Yeah, because now we have an email from a listener, Darwa, who says, "What's up with tomatoes? Mine aren't producing much. Is it the weather? I mean, is it the fact that we've had, you know, when it rains, it pours, and then when it doesn't rain, it doesn't rain."
Pollinators don't like 100 degrees, so I think that's part of it. They're just not getting out there as often. But do make your garden pollinator friendly. We were talking about that before we went on air. Just bring in some different flowers that may help bring some of those pollinators in and just give them a safe space, and then they can do the work they're supposed to do in your garden.
Mm-hmm. And Tiara, you all are doing a pollinator garden up at Plantation Park Heights. So give us an idea of the kinds of things you're putting in there to attract the pollinators.
So inside of our pollinator garden, we have marigolds, yarrow, star flowers, echinacea, black-eyed Susans, chamomile, lavender. Even I caught some bees sleeping inside of the squash flowers that are still kind of tight. So basically anything that's flowers. Mountain mint that has the white flowers that grow at the top as well.
And you just mix it all in. Like, you know, if you got a clump of marigolds, you just stick it right in with all the other stuff.
Yep, marigolds, yeah. Yarrow, all together.
Yeah. And Farmer Chippy, when it comes to planting now, in the heat of summer here, July and August, these are really going to be our hottest months. I mean, who knows if the rain will keep up. We've gotten lots more rain than we got last year. I had one of the farmers at the farmer's market in Waverly tell me that in the beginning of May, he's up in Pennsylvania, Dave Reed. He has Reed's Orchards, and he has wonderful apples and pears and stuff and strawberries, blueberries. He told me that at the beginning of May, like May 1st through 8th, he got the more rain in those 5 days or 8 days than he got the whole year so far, from January through the end of April. So it really, I mean, we were in a very serious drought situation. Now it's better. What do you plant given that kind of condition?
So we believe in April showers and May flowers. We believe in that, right? So once this harvest is done, we're in the stage now where we're harvesting and seeding. There's very little planting going on, like seedlings or anything like that. It's too hot for that. So we're doing seeds and we're harvesting for our markets and our distribution and all that, and all aggregating with the rest of our community. So we're getting food from 4 farmers in Baltimore, and we're getting food from 4 farmers in Baltimore County. So when we get, our tomatoes aren't performing right now. They're not
really
amazing. You know, usually by now, you get a couple of nice ones. It's not that way. It's really too hot.
And it's because of the heat.
Yeah, it's really too hot. So we're trying to aggregate what we can, but with our friends and the help from our friends, we're able to make sure we make it to market, make sure we make our distribution. We're not doing much on our own. When you add the children and youth works and all the other distractions, it's pretty challenging.
Yeah, you got a lot of distractions, that's for sure, but a lot of kids are having a great time and they're learning an awful lot. But, you know, Carrie, the amount of rain that we've had doesn't make up for the heat. I mean, it's still hot when it's raining. So,
for example,
last year in 2024, in the month of May, the Baltimore area had 3.7 inches of rain. This year, it was 7.8 inches of rain, more than double. You know, we had more rain in April than last year. We had a little less rain in March, believe it or not, than we did the year before. June was another inch and a half more than we got in June of 2024. But just because we're getting rain doesn't necessarily mean that's going to make up for these scorching temperatures.
So true. And I keep saying I'm going to get rain barrels at my house. My neighbor has them and does a great job. But wow, what a great year for that, to top off all your rain barrels. So if we do get ourselves in a drought, you have water there that's readily available and ready to go.
And when it comes to what the kids are understand what the kids are learning, what is your hope, you know, your aspiration for a child who spends many, if not most of her days at the farm this summer?
Two things: grow your own food, and secondly, we need each other. Community, building community together is very important for me and the children.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just for kids, especially Farmer Chippy, you know, who've never done it before. This is a brand new experience. Is it difficult? I mean, what are the challenges that you face getting folks to figure out how to cook it? I mean, if they get a whole box of, you know, kale and collards and fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, if they're not used to cooking that, it can be a problem.
Yeah, well, if
you can look at that stuff and say, what do I do with this?
Yeah. You can make it like edutainment, you know, make it fun. And then what we do is like, so beets, we drop the beet, right? So we have beets now. We take a week and we learn everything about beets. We juice them, we steam them, we roast them, and then they get to learn. So if you spend a week with a child.
So it's beet week at Plantation Park.
We're dropping the beet. Yeah, next week.
They may think that beets are things that you wear on your ears, right? The headphones.
Yeah, and next week we're going to be killing them with the kale. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know what I mean? And if we act right, let us continue to do it with the children.
There we go.
Yeah, so we make fun of it, and that's the way we attract the children. So it's easy to bring them in because their parents drop them off, but retaining them is important because after the summer, we want to be able to follow up and follow through at school. We want to be able to follow them at school, be able to work with them to build a pollinator garden at school so they can continue the knowledge that they've learned over the summer.
That's Farmer Chippy from Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm. Farmer Tiara is with us as well, and Carrie Engel is here. She's the greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get some more of your questions and comments. We have an email from a listener who has a comment about pollinators, and we have Michael who's on the line from Glen Oaks, and we're going to get to Michael and our emailers as we come back. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. Let us know what you're planting. Let us know what's working. Let us know what you wish was working better, and we will try to answer any and all questions you have about your garden. It's Back to the Garden here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, the U.S. Senate is debating, as we speak, a top priority of the Trump administration. You just heard Taylor talking about it. The bill is called H.R. 4. It's the Rescissions Act of 2025. It would claw back federal funds for public media and for many foreign aid programs. It passed the House just last month by just 2 votes. They had some procedural votes that were taken in the Senate earlier this week that passed by 1 vote. J.D. Vance, the vice president, had to break the tie. So they're talking about it now. They're debating it on the floor. And tomorrow afternoon here on Midday, we're going to talk about what the consequences would be for WIPR and the larger public media ecosystem in Maryland and beyond if this bill goes through. And right now it looks like it's quite likely that it will. It's going to be close, but we'll have to see. And as Taylor mentioned, it's not too late to let your representative know how you feel about public funding for public media. But I'm going to talk about it tomorrow with Craig Swagler. He's the president and general manager of Baltimore Public Media, which includes WIPR and WTMD, as well as David Folkenflik, who covers the media for NPR. He's a former reporter for the Baltimore Sun. So that's on the way tomorrow. And if you've just joined us today, it's Back to the Garden.
We are stars. We are stars. We are
indeed, we are back to the garden. We are welcoming your questions and comments about all things horticultural. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. Carrie Engel is with us. She's the greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville. Farmer Chippy is the founder of Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm. And Farmer Tiara Matthews is the president of Park Heights the Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm. So again, give us a call if you have a question or comment. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. So Carrie, here's a question from a listener on email who says there's fewer pollinators this year. And I wonder if there's anything we can do to increase it besides planting more plants that attract pollinators. For example, swabbing the flowers of tomato plants
with a cotton swab.
I've heard people do that. I've also heard people use an electric toothbrush.
But what do you swab it with?
Well, you don't. You just go up and you kind of move the pollen around a little bit, because that's what the bumblebee does. So the electric toothbrush is kind of doing the same thing to help with that. The other thing, I think, again, spreading the things out a little bit, just kind of don't keep your yard too neat. I'm not one of those people, so I never have to worry about it. But like having little piles of leaves that you never got to, or an old firewood stack, those are all great to haul in pollinators too. An awful lot of our native bees use those areas to sort of live in. And just make sure they have a water source and also a shade source, so they have some shelter during the time. And that's going to help all of us.
Now, Farmer Chippy, that surprises me. I wouldn't think that wood and leaves would attract the bees. I thought they were just going for flowers. That's interesting.
Well, they have other things that happen in the pile, and bees are attracted to the other things, you know. What we got to remember too is there are native plants that are growing alongside your plants in the garden. There's a reason they're growing, you know. So don't put them to the lawnmower all the time. Sometimes let the dandelions grow. Give it about 2 or 3 weeks, a month, before you cut your grass, so that you can encourage the pollinators to stay around.
Yeah. And do the kids, Tiara, are they hip to pollinators? Do they know what the bees are doing and stuff? Is that the kind of thing that you're talking to them about?
My babies, our youth and young, amazing people, scholars, and new urban farmers, they definitely know. They will tell you that those bees that are on the ground are carpenter bees, and they live in barrels in the ground. So all bees don't live in hives. Some of them actually like wood on the ground because they live in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's earwiggers and so many other amazing bugs that live in those things and sleep in those piles as well, pollinator bugs. So,
yeah, I got carpenter bees on my deck, and they drill little holes in my deck. Yep. I will confess I do shoo them away every so often.
They pollinate for you.
I know they're pollinating, but they're also making drill holes.
It's a give and take.
It is a give and take.
You're not going to trade your shelter for theirs.
Yeah, that's right. Right. It's not quite an even trade. Right. Let's go to the phones. Michael's on the line from Glen Oaks. Michael, welcome to Back to the Garden. Thanks for calling.
Pollinators need in the garden the same thing I do, somewhere to hide and a cold drink.
There you go.
My question, and good day to all of your guests and you, Tom. My question is about white flies. We put in kale and cabbage, and then we added some eggplants and some peppers, and the white flies have really been feasting on the cabbage to the point that I had to pull it out. And I'm wondering, how do I battle the white flies? And then, the white flies really devoured the cabbage, not so much on the kale. The kale has been kind of fine, but I guess that's my main question.
Okay, so white fly, you know, again, spacing the plant's going to be important. If you want to stay natural, I'd probably go with insecticidal soap and with oils. And we've been pretty lucky. Unless the temperatures are really, really high, you can use the oils early in the morning. But a horticultural oil is safe to use. The other thing I would double check on your cabbage is to make sure you don't have cabbage worm. You'll just see a little tiny green caterpillar. You might see white butterflies going around your garden, but they will devour cabbage and things in that family just in no time. So keep an eye on that. The white fly are a little more of a nuisance on some of that. Eggplant, as beautiful as a plant it is, I think will bring in every insect known to man into your garden. It's an unfortunate thing. But again, try to shoo them away. Use some of the natural ways to try to protect it. And there are beneficial insects out there that you can purchase and bring into the garden. So there's a lot of options.
Yeah, and the little white butterflies, man, I do, I'll admit, I got a bunch of them in my house. I mean, so the butterflies are beautiful, but the little white ones are more trouble than they're worth. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stomp them.
Yeah.
Okay. Farmer Chippy is a take-no-prisoners person when it comes to them, the little white butterflies, get rid of them. All right, we have an email from James in Mount Vernon who says, I have a fig tree in a planter that's espaliered against a south-facing brick wall. The tree is 3 years old. It's grown about 4 inches this year, and it has lots of fruit on it. Over the last couple of weeks, lots of leaves are going yellow and falling off. Should I be worried? It's grown 4 inches, and it's got lots of fruit. Yeah. Seems like it's doing okay.
Yeah, if there's any way you can shade it from this heavy heat for a little bit, maybe with a harvest row cover or something, that might help. But I'm hoping we're out of the heavy, heavy heat.
Yeah. Now, does that work? Do you all up at Plantation Park Heights, do you put, you know, covers over the plants when it gets this hot?
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the temperature, it would make it even hotter, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, the thing is this. There are sustainable methods and conservation methods that we have to use. So, like centipede tunnels. I don't know if you know what that is. They're like not a high tunnel. They're like really short to the ground. And then we usually put a cover over it to protect us from bugs and sometimes the weather. It all depends.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the answer is yes, we do use it, but we use it sparingly.
Because it would steam things up, wouldn't it? I mean, if the sun is beating on it, it's one thing. It's going to be pretty hot. But if you then put a little cover on top of it, it would make it even hotter inside.
It's pretty clear and transparent and like
transparent.
Easy for air to flow through it, you know. Tiara may be able to talk a little bit more about.
My favorite thing to do to protect my plants is don't cut the weeds. Let the burdock and the dandelion. People don't understand that weeds actually protect your plants. It gives the bugs something else to eat. And when they grow really tall, it protects the plants from extreme heats and blocks it from sun.
See, now that's something I don't know. I'm one of those guys that think weeds are bad because they take the energy away from the main attraction.
Well, what you call weeds, I call medicine. So like burdock, the leaves grow.
Of course,
huge.
I'm talking about little containers. You know, I'm talking about containers. I'm not talking about real gardening.
Containers, too. If you get a dandelion plant that pops up in there.
Keep it in there.
Keep it in there.
Yeah.
It could be a sister plant.
Mm-hmm.
We used to plant three plants together that are all different, you feel me, in the same soil. So,
410-662-8780. That's our number. Our email is midday@wypr.org. So, Carrie, I do compost in the plastic things, you know, because living in the city, you can't do it outside. We got friends from, the rat family who come visit if we do that. But So I have two of them. I keep one going, you know, and then I use the other one. And while the other one, the first one is cooking, et cetera, so I rotate them. And almost every year I get stuff that just grows from the compost, right? So I planted an eggplant. You mentioned eggplant. And it started getting overtaken by something that was growing with it that I didn't plant, right? And it's stringing out. I think it's a squash.
Okay.
I think. I'm not 100% sure.
Right.
And I got all these flowers, these yellow flowers, but no fruit of anything. And it's I have this on the roof of my garage, and it's taken it over. It's like the plant that ate New York City.
That's cool. I just watch it. That's fun.
Yeah, and it is fun to watch, but the eggplant doesn't like it.
Right.
The eggplant, you know, keeps withering every time. I got to keep, you know, watering the heck out of it, even with all the rain.
And I had the finest gourd crop out of my compost pile one year. It just grew up along the fence right behind it. It was lovely.
Yeah. But is there anything you can do to fruiten it up?
You know, you can try fertilizer that's a little bit higher in phosphorus. That can help you get going. If you want to go natural, you can use like a bone meal, but sometimes that draws some animals. My dogs always liked it. So they'd get in the garden whenever I had bone meal. But that's probably the main thing. The other thing, if you want, is to cut it off and let the eggplant do its thing. But that's hard. You know, when you see a plant growing, it's hard to get rid of it.
It is, because it's not hurting. It's doing well. It's doing well. So we have an email from Kate Fiegel Miller in Charles Village, who says, I love cilantro. You don't like cilantro. Are you allergic? A lot of people are allergic to cilantro. I'm not. And I'm with Kate because I have exactly the same problem that she's asking you about. I've tried growing it most summers that I've lived in Baltimore, and it grows just fine, but it thins out and goes to seed so fast that I can barely use it. And I've been told it's because the weather's too hot, but would love to hear from the experts any suggestions. And my thing happens exactly. I've used it once before I cooked with it once before I could. It just, now it's gone.
Yeah.
It's over.
Cilantro, for me, I plant it late in the season or very early in the season. From June to, let's say, August, I'm not cilantro guy
ain't
at
happening.
All. Nah, I probably cut it all, dried it out, some of it, made it into like a spice already, you know what I mean? Or probably flash freeze some of it, but definitely not harvesting during those months.
Because it's just heat.
It's just thin. It's just like you have to pick so much like in order to get a meal.
Right.
Like if you're cooking for a lot of people, you have to like rip out three or four plants. And in the winter, you just have one plant. And it does the job, you know what I mean? But it thins out. It's not as thick and bushy.
Right.
So I do it in the winter.
So and it will grow outside in the winter.
Beautiful.
Wow.
It'll be beautiful. It'll grow up to a period of time. When I say the winter, I mean, I use it like for Christmas and
October,
Thanksgiving.
October, November, December.
Yes, yeah. Christmas and Thanksgiving. That's cilantro time for me. I love it. Yeah.
That's Farmer Chippy. He is the founder of Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. We're going back to the garden. Carrie Engel from Valley View Farms is here, and Farmer Tiara Matthews from Plantation Park Heights is here as well. Let's go back to the phones to Jim, who's on the line in Parkville. Jim, welcome to the show. Thanks for checking in.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I, too, compost. I use my yard clippings and stuff and keep a compost heap. But I have some dogs, and I've got a lot of dog poop, and I know that I'm not supposed to put it in with the compost that I use for vegetables and things that you eat. I've been bagging it up and just throwing it in the trash. But is there some kind of use I can put this lots of dog poop to, you know, put it to work where it's safe and maybe not attract rats by burying it, or abandon that idea if you think it's a bad idea?
Well, Tiara, we're getting a lot of shaking heads. No, 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 no. I mean, not much use for it, huh?
No, no, no.
The garbage piece is good.
I mean, if you wanted to get a little sciencey, nah, no, don't do it.
Sciencey?
Biodigester, maybe something like that that could actually break it down and make it into a fertilizer, but that would be costly. You would have to be able to purchase the equipment to have and then take training on it as well.
A biodigester.
Yes.
That's a new one on me.
Yep. So unless you have that, no.
Talk about that.
Oh, the biodigester is something that we
y'all have a biodigester?
We just won a grant. Talk about the grant.
So the grant is in collaboration with MDA. It's one, a compost education grant, but also to do soil remediation and bioremediation as well. So we have been training young people, and we have some compost interns, but the biodigester allows us to put fecal matter into it, and it decomposes it and comes out as a fertilizer.
Wow.
So
does it, like, get rid of the stuff it doesn't need?
Yeah. Well, it cooks it down.
Oh, it cooks it to a way that so that it's all, it actually works as safe fertilizer.
Yeah.
And two, just to add value, we have been a compost community compost site for some years. When Baltimore City originally launched their compost initiative, we were one of the pilot projects. So we have a 3,000 PSI compost platform, and we have a 3-bin system. So every 30 days or so, we move it to the second bin, and then move it to the third bin, and then it's out in about 90 days. The biodigester makes it come out in 24 hours. So I can put everything in, it processes, and I can get up to 1,400 pounds of compost ready to go.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
In 24 hours.
Yeah, man.
That's cool.
Ooh, that's good. That is quick. That is quick compost. Mine takes an entire summer, an entire year.
Same.
Yeah. Right. So Kathleen is in Berlin, and she says, we have harlequin bugs on our pak choi and our kale and veggies like that. How do we get rid of harlequin bugs without pesticides or squishing them?
Well,
squishing them definitely
good.
Works.
Yeah, you can also get a hard spray on your hose and try to wash them off that way, try to direct them. You can also get insects that are, what do I want to say, beneficial and add them. But they really... I don't know, unless they really get into big trouble. Like, I don't have that much of a problem outside with insects. Once I move plants inside, I get more because there's just not a natural ecosystem that everything takes care of each other. So if you don't want to use anything, I'd start with water and just see how you do.
Just rinse them off.
Just rinse them off, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Tiara, you're a big fan of bugs. You're a bug fan.
I really am. I love bugs. But the Harley Quinn is my arch nemesis, enemy.
See, there's good bugs and bad bugs.
They are definitely a hard bug to get rid of. I would definitely recommend crop transitions. So basically planting seasonal crops. The brassicas are what are normally attract the Harley Quinns. We use cayenne pepper and water and sprayed a lot of the plants down to keep them from eating them. But prayer works for Harley Quinns.
Well, that works for a whole lot of things. You know, just don't limit it just to your bugs, right?
Right.
If I just really mentioned, if you go to the University of Maryland Extension website, they have anything you need about that. So they have a whole system of exactly what to do, to get rid of some of these insects. And I know we both use them extensively.
Whoops.
Yep, shut up.
Got it. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have more Back to the Garden. We'll get to our callers. We'll get to some more emails with Carrie Engel, the greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms, Farmer Chippy, the founder of Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm, and Tiara Matthews, who is the president of Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
We are stars. We are golden. We are good. We work hard. And we got to get ourselves back to the garden.
And welcome back. If you've just come, just joined us today and coming along for the ride, we are indeed heading back to the garden here on Midday. We're talking about tips and tricks for the plants in your pots and plots. The Land Trust Alliance estimates that in the United States, we lose to residential and commercial development roughly 150 acres of natural land and 40 acres of farmland every hour. That's the equivalent of vanishing the entirety of Shenandoah National Park every year. That's what the Land Trust Alliance estimates. So that's one of the reasons that planting native plants is so important to the local ecosystems. And our guests are here to answer your questions about native plants and pests and anything else you have on your mind and in your garden. Farmer Chippy is the founder of Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm. The president, Tiara Matthews, is with us as well. Carrie Engel is here. She's the greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville, and they join me here in our beautifully newly renovated Studio A. You can join us too, 410-662-8780, or email midday@wipr.org. So we have an aphids question here. This is a listener who says, I've got a tomato plant that's been attacked by aphids. I've been spraying with organic pesticides, but the leaves are continuing to droop, and there seems to be few blossoms and fruit. Any suggestions for how I can save this? Who'd like to take that?
Well, I'm going to go back to heat for just not having the blossoms. The tomatoes really just don't do anything, and neither do the pollinators, so they're kind of taking a break. Aphids will usually move on if they get too crowded in an area. They're a really cool insect in that they develop wings so they can move on. I think that's just a really cool part about how they've evolved. But aphids, you can usually take care, again, with a hose spray. You can take care of it with insecticidal soap. Oils, again, I'd be a little bit careful in this hot weather. But it is doable. And then if you can get yourself some ladybugs, that's their favorite food.
Oh, uh-huh.
Ladybugs love aphids. So you can actually purchase those online or go to your favorite garden center. They'll have them.
Really? You can buy ladybugs?
You can buy ladybugs, yep.
I always thought that was just a matter of luck.
Praying mantids.
The ladybug shows up on your finger, and that's just because it's your lucky day. It's like finding a penny, you know? Oh, interesting. All right, let's go to the phones again. Emmanuel is on the line from Windsor Mill. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you all for your service. It's this spring I purchased a L.A. MO line.
What's that?
La Roma tomato?
Or what? No, kind? L.A., it's, they're lilies. They're tall.
Okay.
Upward-facing petals, yellow petals.
Okay.
My question is, can I just plant them in my yard?
Yeah.
How do I, is it too
yeah, yeah. Most of them have a bulb attached. So as you unpot it, just make sure that bulb goes down at least to the same soil level it is in the pot. Most of those do like full sun. So put an area where it gets at least 6 hours or so. And the taller lilies will usually bloom for maybe a month. Mm-hmm. Daylilies will go a little bit longer, but they get new flowers every day. So, they're a wonderful addition to the garden.
And Emmanuel, I'm sorry, what's the lily called again?
It says L.A., and then it says Lilium Hybrid.
Oh, it's a hybrid.
They were bright, bold yellow, and they face upward.
Yeah, there are so many, and I was just with a group of garden writers the other day, and there are people there that know all 1,000 varieties by
just lame. Looking.
Yes, I'm like, okay, you're a lily. Fine, yellow.
Yeah. That's me all the way.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, good luck with those, Emmanuel. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Angela, our good buddy from West Baltimore. Welcome to the show. Always good to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much. So my question is around the benefits of connecting to the earth, the benefits of, you know, gardening and farming to mental, emotional, and spiritual wellness. You know, we are all going through, you know, what we're going through as human beings on this planet. And, you know, especially a lot of us in Baltimore, we've lived through various traumas and, you know, just being alive in this day. So just wanted to ask you guys to touch a little bit on, you know, how we can, as the song that you guys are playing, get back to the garden and the benefits of that. So thank you.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, Angela. I mean, Tiara, this is something you mentioned right at the very top of the show, that it's not just about gardening at Plantation Park, guys. It's about community.
Yep. I think that's the most important aspect of gardening and just getting outside is building a community. When Miss Pam walks up the street and she needs tomatoes, instead of her going all the way up to Save-A-Lot, she can come and get them from us. Or you could be the next grower in your community that allows seniors to get a little extra something that they can't afford or add something to a meal. And I would just say, go outside. We got to get back to loving each other and get back to being outside. Get that vitamin D. Don't be afraid to get dirty. Stop running from insects. And let's get outside and build communities together.
Yeah, because, you know, what you've done up there at Plantation Park Heights, Farmer Chippy, is just so remarkable and so wonderful because of what it has done to that area of the city. I mean, you, and this was a big motivator for you. We got pollinators and motivators.
Yeah.
And this, you know, you saw what you saw 10 years ago and said, hey, we can fix this.
Yeah. I mean, I live in a major city. We have one of the greatest ports in the world. And for some reason, I wasn't able to get culturally appropriate foods, not foods that are closer to my DNA. However, once I encouraged the community to get involved and they jumped on board, especially the children, now I have children for the last 8 years. So some of them who are in high school are now coming out as lawyers and doctors. And they are saying to me, Farmer Chippy, you better create a space for me to get a job back in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
So really and truly, I feel like I've accomplished my mission and I'm ready to moonwalk out of it and push the children to fill that void.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Angela, you make a great point and we appreciate that perspective. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. So Carrie, here's Kathleen in Randallstown who says, how do I get rid of or control wild thistle?
There's a few ways. One, try to pull it before it goes to flower, because once it goes to flower, it's going to be everywhere. So be a little careful with that. There are products out there specifically for it. There's one called Thistledown that definitely takes care of them. I'd just be really careful to if you're going to go chemically to get rid of some things, just go right to that plant. Don't go anywhere else, because pollinators will still visit that plant. We don't want to hurt them. So I use a weed eater to get them most of the time, and that takes care of them in my yard, but I understand, because I have a conservation area behind me that does not, they don't do anything. So things fly over into my yard, and
yeah,
you just
happens.
Have to deal with it.
Right. How about powdery mildew? Do you all get that up at the farm in Park Heights? And how do you attack powdery mildew? Because that's a pretty common problem, I think, in a lot of gardens.
Well, if it's me, I cut off the leaves, and then I start treating it with, you know, fungicides or whatever.
Okay.
But it's all organic.
It's usually, yeah, something that changes the pH just a little bit, so both downy mildew and powdery mildew won't grow. So mm-hmm. Most of the things out there are safe, but please read the label.
Yeah.
Thoroughly.
Yeah. And I find that sometimes the plants outgrow a lot of the, like, powdery mildew.
True.
Or any of the diseases that they may have. If you just keep
So maybe they'll have it one season, but then the next season when it comes back, they won't have it.
Or maybe they won't have it in 2 weeks.
Oh. Okay, that quickly.
Yes. Yeah.
But okay. You got to pay attention. You got to take them leaves off to make sure it doesn't spread. And then you got to treat that area, right? So we have a bunch of organic stuff that we use, but we like to make sure we either go to Valley View and maybe consult with someone else just to make sure, because they come on different plants. right? So you don't know. Usually we get it on our, like it's right now is our pumpkin and squash time because we're putting seeds in right now. But we do have pumpkin from the summertime. And now you can see on those leaves a little bit coming here and there. So we do have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. And is now, Carrie, because of the heat, now is a good time for seeds? And Farmership, you mentioned.
Oh, it depends. Yeah,
I emphasize this, that rather than the little small plants, seeds, you know, because they're going to take a little bit longer to pop up.
You probably still have time. We were talking about this before. Cucumbers, squash, pumpkins, we might be getting a little late because they take so long. Some of the smaller melons would be okay, too. You can still plant beans if you want to just keep going with that. A lot of your herbs you can do progressive plantings with and keep them going. And then start thinking about carrots and beets and radishes and all those for a fall crop. And even kale and collards and all that can be planted now in seed. Like I said, we've started the transplants for them, and they'll be ready in another few weeks.
With carrots and potatoes, the things that grow underground, how do you know when to pick them? That's always fascinated me.
So the University
how do you know they're ready?
So the University of Maryland has a schedule, when to plant and when to harvest. It is important that you pay attention to that because there's a range in which you get the vegetable or the fruit at its best. And it's all on the University of Maryland Extension website. You have a whole schedule of what you can plant, when you can harvest. And I think if you practice that over a period of time, you wouldn't even need the notes. You know, you'll just know what time to put one in.
Yeah. So basically you put it in and there's a fixed period of time that it's going to take to grow. And then you'll know it's time to get. But you got that takes some faith, though, doesn't it?
Well, it takes some organization. You know, like when I was doing it alone, I had no support. But now I have Tierra and Karma and all of them. They keep things tight, bro. I get a chance to really rock back for a minute, you know?
I was going to say, don't be afraid to make mistakes. I learn more from them, unfortunately, than I do some of the things I do right. So if you pull something too early, all right, I won't do any more of that today.
Right.
Well, I'm big on mistakes. I know all about mistakes. I'm good at those.
I'm the champion.
But this is the time. I mean, Carrie, this is, you know, mid-July. Carrots are good to plant now. Rutabagas, right? Turnips, if you're going to go into seeds, you know, for these things.
Never used a rutabaga in my life, but no.
Oh, I love rutabagas. Yeah. But the flowers we're talking about, cone flowers, that's a big native plant.
Cone flowers are huge. Yeah. I just met one of the breeders for like probably, I don't know, over 100 varieties. But they're amazing. They're all in bloom right now. We probably have 40 or 50 varieties just at the store. They're native,
and not
necessarily right here,
them?
But they're native around us. It's not too late to plant them. No.
And they're perennial, so they'll come back next year.
Just anything you plant now, just make sure you have a water source for them. When you do water them, don't go out and give them a little spray. Give them a good, deep watering so you can get those roots to go down. So they're more sustainable if we do end up again in a drought area. And the first year, most perennials are kind of slow, but by the second year, they really get rolling.
All right, well, that's all the time we have. Carrie Engel, a greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville, Farmer Chippy and Tiara Matthews, they are from the Plantation Park Heights Urban Farm. I understand that there's karaoke tonight at Druid Hill Park with the Agri-Hood. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And what will you be singing?
I'm just Maestro judging, Chippy. Brother.
Oh, you're judging.
Yeah, I'm the judge.
Okay. All right. Don't judge, babe. Don't judge. All right. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk about the funding dilemmas that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is facing, along with several programs involved in international aid. Dave Folkenflik from NPR, he covers media, and Craig Swagler, the president and general manager of Baltimore Public Media, will join me for that conversation. They are debating it on the floor of the Senate as we speak. Fresh Air is up next. ProPublica investigative reporter Ubram Lustgarten on the catastrophic flooding that tore through central Texas last week. That's up after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.